Radio Influence. The future is now.
Revelations that have emerged in the past few months from whistleblower Edward Snowden and others
have painted a disturbing picture of widespread, suspicionless surveillance of American citizens.
We got a wake-up call just recently.
NSA snooping includes the interception and collection of call detail records and internet traffic,
including audio, video, photographs, documents, chat logs, and emails.
Every American is at risk for getting caught up in the NSA dragnet,
including average citizens not suspected of a crime.
We have also learned of the large-scale collaboration with telecom giants, internet companies, and service providers.
Some concerned email providers have chosen to shut their doors rather than cave to government subpoenas to hand over their users' data.
We've been misled.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
We've seen this story before.
We've had too much secrecy in this country. It has corrupted the government.
And we decided it was wrong.
It was wrong then, and it's wrong now.
This is a fearful situation. The American people, one of the basic rights is the right to privacy.
Unrestrained, illegal, secret intimidation and harassment of the essential ability of Americans to participate freely in American political life shall never happen again.
Nixon's crimes predated widespread internet use by decades.
The tools for surveillance have never been more powerful, and the threat to our civil liberties has never been greater.
Edward Snowden was not the first. I represent six NSA whistleblowers who are being charged with espionage for telling the truth.
We truly, as a nation, are at a crossroads.
I became aware they were sweeping up everybody's data indiscriminately.
What I was eyewitness to was the subversion of the Constitution. And that was when the hair on the back of my neck went up. And so I became a whistleblower.
This is our information.
This is our information.
This is our information.
This is our information.
It is the digital archive of our lives.
Texts of our chats with our families.
The backbone of everything that we care for, our humanitarian causes and things that we fight for.
It is everything you use the internet for.
History tells us we need to watch the watchers.
And in the surveillance state, democracy itself is dead.
It makes a mockery of our system of government, which is based on the notion of independent branches of government, including a fourth estate, the press.
A free society should not have secret laws.
It doesn't have to present this false trade-off between security or privacy.
We need to bring NSA activity from the shadows into the light of day.
We need to end mass suspicionless surveillance.
Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories, office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion, a lot of smoke come out of the top.
110 stories high, they are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
pill. Nervous system of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
Doubt. WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
I am so ready for the show. I get goosebumps.
Oh, my God. What's going on, Internet? Dangerous Conversation is live because this whole radio fart still likes... I'm all about the podcast, but you know what I'm about? I'm about being able to push a button and just have that button go, fuck Tucker, Tucker sucks. And I have a whole bunch of other people go, you know what? Tucker Carlson is a douchebag. Fuck Tucker, Tucker sucks. Welcome back to Dangerous Conversation. I am your host, Scott Ledger. Most people call me Ledge. This is I don't even know what show this is at Radio Influence. Let me see. This is into our fourth month. We missed one because I was coughing up. It sounded like one of those 15-year-old cats that every 10 minutes is bringing up a hairball. My dog got tired of me. An animal that walks on four legs was tired of me and my phlegm. Go figure. So I feel great now. Energy's coming back. That flu kicked my ass. I'm telling you, man, that flu kicked my ass. You know, the funny thing is, I used to remember, like, being 25, 30 years old and going, why are old people so worried about the fucking flu? Who cares? It's the flu, right? Now I'm realizing that as I age and my immune system, well, it's just not what it used to be. A flu that normally lasted 5 days when I was in my 20s, 7 days in my 30s, I am literally walking my dog 2 days ago. Wait a minute. I'm going to bring one up here. Oh, man. Are you kidding me? They're not going to spit it in. Hang on a second. See, the difference is no color. It used to be yellow and purple and green. Now it's just clear. There's the phlegm report. Now back to Lynch. So, yeah, I'm feeling great. And the funny thing is I have so many topics I want to get to tonight, and there's a lot of audio, and I know it's only a two-hour show, but after all, I am the boss. Isn't that truth? Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks. So maybe, I don't know, I might go a little long, which has never happened in my sexual life, but maybe in my radio career that's where I'm meant to be long, like Hulk Hogan's penis. Oh, damn it! Like Hulk Hogan's penis. I had a misfire on my mouse. So welcome to Dangerous Conversation. Right here at RadioInfluence.com, a radio network of professional broadcasters who are doing their best to give terrestrial radio as much as, you know, we still would love a paycheck from terrestrial radio. To give terrestrial radio, the double tall boy. You kick us to the curve, and you just think we're just going to quietly go on into the night. We're going to disappear. We're going to take what was our passion, what was our skill set, and just go, I guess I'll sell paint at Home Depot. Fuck you. Kick us to the curb. Guess what? There's this thing called the Internet. And there's a bunch of really good professional radio people out there going, let me see, build a home studio, own your own product, not have to deal with the corporate crap. And by the way, it's twist offs. Do this live on the radio. I just spilled some on my shirt. Hang on a sec. Got a little bit in the Fu Manchu. That's the beauty of what a lot of, I am all about the podcast. I don't care if you've never been behind a microphone. If you feel you've got something to say, God bless you, go do it. Believe me, I am so new media, geeked about new media, and in love with new media that I am proud to take, my 36 years of terrestrial experience and bring it over here and be part of Radio Influence, because they just signed another amazing talent, Nancy Alexander. Nancy's... she was on with Regis Philbin on TV. She was part of the morning show, the Q105 Morning Zoo, when zoos were popular in the 80s. The original zoo format started in this market. Okay? And it wasn't like they didn't have competition. These guys named Ron and Ron were here. And Tampa has just been a – I don't know if it's the weather, if it's the climate. And I think it is. I think it's a combination of the climate and the lifestyle where a lot of talents are going, man, Tampa's a great market. It's a top 20 market, just about. Puerto Rico kind of edges out a little bit. I think we used to be 19, now we're 20. And in the meantime, look at how many talents have come out of Tampa Bay. All formats. Now, I'm not saying that Glenn Beck isn't talented. He's got chops. I think he's a douchebag, and he, whatever the way the wind's blowing, that's where his opinions are. But I will not speak disparagingly of his skill set. In other words, Nancy or myself or anybody else who have been behind a microphone for decades are suddenly being kicked to the curb. Sometimes it's budget. It's always budget. Why would they take the people on the front lines? You have to remember what terrestrial radio is. The people that talk on the mic are on the front lines. They are the station. They represent the station. And it's not an easy skill set. Everybody thinks they can do it. Go do a podcast and get back to me. Let me know how it works out for you. But the people that have been doing it for decades are just flowing to the internet. Because you know why? We're just not good enough for you guys anymore, are we? And I work part-time in terrestrial radio. Don't get me wrong. But they don't know me. I've been in this market for 26 years, and they don't know who the fuck I am, and they don't care. If I don't fit into their matrix, and I do weekends at a station, you know? And I like it. It's fun. I click the mic, talk, I ramp up music, and I do what I started doing a long, long time in radio, and rocking it and playing music and bringing an energy to a presentation. There's not a lot of room for personality in 20 seconds, but if I nail it, I know it. My boss tells me, dude, you do more in 20 seconds than people can do in 10 minutes. But guess what? Just not good. Just not good enough. Just not good enough. Now, everybody that's new to podcasting, I get it. You're new. You know what? Good for you, man. Go for it. Fucking A. Find a niche, and it's got to be a niche you're passionate about, and if you are, I'll know. When I listen to you, I'll go, boy, man, these guys know their shit. You know, talk wrestling, you talk MMA, or you talk, police issues, I mean, or you talk sports. I mean, if you go to the lineup at Radio Influence, you get more than one presentation. You get a lot of professionals and some newbies. But some of these guys don't even sound like newbies. Some of these guys, in other words, never did terrestrial radio, but they found their niche doing their podcast, and they have huge numbers. Will those guys ever visit terrestrial? Hopefully, if they're smart, they don't. They already own their own brand. They don't have to have their wrist slapped every time they say, oh, you can't say bitch or shit or fuck or shit. You want to just cave in the creativity? And that's what terrestrial's done. Instead of terrestrial expanding and finding its way to connect to millennials, which is the new demo of where the money's being spent, they're scared as shit and going old school and not even trying anything new. So however it turns out for them, good. I don't wish, believe me, I have a ton of friends who work in terrestrial radio. The ego involved in what I do, I miss it. I'll be honest. Yeah. I think I can bring it, but they don't care. They're scared of a show like this. They're like, oh God, what's he going to say? Well, you know what? Corporation. You know what? Every time I flip the mic on and I get all amped up and it's 7:59 and I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, terrestrial. What have you done for us lately? You kick great producers on air, off air. It's happening again. I see it with all my Facebook friends that still are in the business. And there are some that are still doing it great. But you know what? This is the future. Home studios, building your own crew, finding your own sponsors, and bringing in talent, and talent always rises to the top. Cream rises to the top. Content is king in media. If you have superior content, you will succeed. Period. I don't care if you got a list or you talk like this. You know what? I'll get past it, because if you're bringing me amazing content or making me laugh or making me cry or moving me or motivating me or pissing me off, any one of those, you know what? You've won me. You've won me over. And why terrestrial radio keeps kicking in, you know, Nancy Alexander, wait till you hear her. Quick. Soccer mom with an attitude and a great rack. I don't know how far she'll take it. She has her own audience, but you know what? She's going to bring even more listeners to this network. And as I watch Jerry and Jason, Jerry Petock and Jason Floyd, go out there and seek talent, I am stoked to be part of this network. I love doing the show. And I've already pitched something for a spinoff of this. Won't happen until, Christ, late summer. But there's a niche for it, too. And wait till that happens. Yeah. Because I'm a professional. This is what I've done for 36 years. This has not just been my paycheck and my passion. It's also been something I've gotten really fucking good at. Was I born with it? Yes. Did I develop it? Yeah. Was I good in 1982? No, I sucked. You know what I did? I pretended I was other DJs. Rock 102, WAQI Springfield. I'm Mike Scott. And now, here's another live mini concert. And I didn't know what I was doing, but all I know is I was born to do it. And here I am with gray hair. And I look back and I go, I'm not done. And the people that get fired every day in this industry are not done. And before the internet, if you fired someone, they had to go away quietly. They didn't have their own platform. They couldn't build their own platform. But guess what we got now? We have this. We have our own studio. We have our own Skype connections and internet connection. I can have a show with four people on it, and none of us are in the same room. And it'll sound like we are. I didn't expect this rant, and I am a go-with-the-flow show kind of guy. Guess what? This entire list, we're going to get to some of it, I promise you. But sometimes you got to say what you got to say. And that is the best part of what I've been watching. Over the last 5 years, I've watched program directors resign from pretty healthy paychecks because they were overworked and underappreciated and take their skill set, like Shark, Michael Sharkey. Google him. He is now simply working from home. And guess what he does? He consults podcasts and podcasters and gives them advice. Here's how you build a show. Here's how you do your prep. Here's how you wrap it up. Make sure you do this. There's a formula to success. Of course there is. But it's also another talented guy who wasn't fired. He went, you know what? You're burning me out. You got me watching 8 radio stations, 5 in this market and 2 else or 4 and 4, whatever. And you know what? He was like, I'm not having fun anymore. So now he takes his skill set and he sits down with people like me or brand new podcasters. And if you're a big fan of podcasts, you listen to Joe Rogan, or you listen to Mark Maron, or you listen to, you know, some of the big ones, Jay Moore, you listen to, Corolla, you know, some of the people that took their fame into podcasting and they had the built-in audience and it went with them. Good. I'm awesome. It's awesome. I love it. But guess what? The up-and-comers, the ones you've never heard about, this is where they show up. They show up in networks like Radio Influence or even smaller networks. I'm no longer part of a Tuesday night network of a bunch of friends that put together a network. Basically, they were big. All of them are talk show junkies. And they built their own network. And I was on them on Tuesdays for a while. And it's because I started at a place, they followed me, and then later on they went and did their own thing. Now, I'm not going to be doing a show with them anymore because other than this show, I'll be doing another show on another network. It'll be different. It won't be as edgy. It'll be – in other words, I need to visit a lot of my personality. So Dangerous Conversation, the uncensored show, is happening here. Dangerous Conversation, the metaphysical, a little bit more in-depth thinking about deeper thoughts, which I occasionally do here, will be done 80% over there. In other words, finding your niche, knowing where to put it. As I grow my brand, as more and more people come to this show and realize you're not being told the truth by mainstream media. Man, I got so much audio I got to get to. See, that sentence right there said, wrap it up. So right now, my program director would be hotlining me going, dude, it's 20 after. You're 5 minutes late for a break. I'm like, yeah, but that was a great opening monologue. I don't care. We got to worry about ratings meters and shit. Well, guess who doesn't? Give me a Ric Flair. That's right. Some of us actually are taking it to the freedom of doing our own thing, the art form of spoken word. Tonight, man, let me see. Okay, here's what I hoped to get to tonight. We got a water leak in South Florida, nuclear plant. One of the canals is actually leaking into the regular water supply. Oh, goody. I probably will pass on this one tonight, but I had a story about heroin is killing thousands of people in our country, and of course, all of it comes from Afghanistan. We will do some cannabis stories, probably two or three. We'll call it This Week in Cannabis. I got some funny stuff I'll get to, maybe. I'll keep that up. I won't get to that story. We'll definitely get to this one. We will do a Carlin's Corner, and the reason I'm saying that right now is because it's a longer piece. It is George, by the way. I try to keep those to like 5 to 6 minutes, but this is 9 minutes, but it's so... It's so Carlin. It's so awesome. We'll do a story about worms, nature, fighting back against GMO processed foods being grown in a field. In other words, they tried to breed insect killer into the plant, and it only took a couple generations later for the insects to adapt. And the insects, you got to remember an insect generation. What insects live like a week? Maybe 2 weeks? So, you know, 10 insect generations happen in like a couple of months. So if you wonder how we grow and we change, well, that's, you know, if you get into, you know, the adaption of Mother Nature, you know, am I going to be like, you know, water world? Am I going to grow gills in the back of my neck and be like, well, you know, I don't know. But anyway, we'll get to that story. We might pass on that one. The reason I don't like doing a lot of the political what I call the surface level politics of, you know, Trump said this, but there's so much good stuff. I can't ignore it. It's just great audio. It's thought provoking. You know, do you realize that the man who is the front runner as the libertarian candidate called Donald Trump a pussy twice? Three times. Because he called him once in a live debate, and then later he explained why he did it, and he called him a pussy two more times. How do you not play that audio? And let me see. We'll do a little music stuff. And, yeah, we'll get to quite a bit. So to wrap up that rant, what is happening in new media isn't just exciting, and here's my spiritual side coming out, isn't just exciting because new media people are doing new media blogs. Believe me, I follow so many people on Twitter and so many people on Facebook that are alt media. We're going to hear from some alt media tonight. They're called the Young Turks. It's a story about Bernie Sanders suddenly out of nowhere wins Michigan. Oops. And the newspapers go after him and print a whole bunch of headlines in like a day. on their websites. And people that keep track of, I call it the Ron Pauling of mainstream media. In other words, Ron Paul was a little bit outside that matrix last time. Even though he ran as a Republican, he's far more libertarian, and he scared the shit out of the establishment. What do they do? Sometimes they wouldn't even list him he'd be like second in the debate, you know, as a score. And he wouldn't even be on the chart. I call that Ron Pauling. Well, the same thing's happened to Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders on the left, running again inside the two-party paradigm, is outside that paradigm because he's a democratic socialist. And guess what? He's winning states. He won 3 out of 4 over the weekend. He won Michigan the other day. And he's won just as many states as Hillary. Do you know what superdelegates are? Yeah, neither did I. But guess what? That's part of how they control the system. In other words, they have all these people out there running in front of you. And believe me, I don't like what Donald Trump has to say, but I love what he's doing to the infrastructure of the matrix. He's cracking it from inside. He's the opposite of Bernie Sanders. As a matter of fact, I've got some audio that says exactly that. So speaking of which, why don't we get to some audio? By the way, we will play one song tonight because the Carlin bit is a little long. And it's another one of those really cool independent unsigned bands with a voice. And they do this great little anthem. Can't wait to play that for you. All right, let's go with, we're talking about the inside. Hang on a sec. Here we go. The inside method of the matrix is if something is outside of that left-right paradigm, that fake bullshit that oligarchs want you to think is your choice, as George Carlin likes to say. You don't have a choice. Well, the moment anybody shows up that's outside of this, they have to be careful around them because they can't control them. Okay? So what happens when and Donald Trump is on the Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough on MSNBC. And remember, they're viewed as the left paradigm and Fox is the right. You know what? The same corporations own the same fucking stations. They're playing you. Oh, and that's what they'll do. Most of those shows will talk about each other all the time. You know, Rachel Maddow will talk about what Bill O'Reilly said. Bill O'Reilly will talk about I don't even know half their names, thank God, because I don't watch their bullshit. But here we go. This is the Morning Joe. Now, what you're hearing is a lot of this happens because people that run sound or people that do lighting or run cameras, they keep rolling during commercial breaks and stuff. And then they take that shit and they give it to a friend and that friend gives it to a friend. And then it ends up as audio on the internet. And some guy at MSNBC goes, who had those mics? Why were those mics live? How did that audio get out? That's what this is right here. Donald Trump sitting down with Scarborough and somebody else, but it says courtesy of Harry Shearer, obviously from The Simpsons. So I don't know if he somehow recorded it his own, but let's check some of this out. Okay, listen, I got to stop and start it a little bit, but it starts out with Joe Scarborough saying, "What do you have after this?"
After this,
I make a speech, get on a plane, make a speech. I'm working.
Well, I tell you what, the Bloomberg poll, all the polls out today look great in South Carolina.
Okay, basically told Trump he's looking good in South Carolina through a Bloomberg poll.
All of you
are. Yeah. Well, look good. But I'm being hit. You know, they're spending $75 million in negative ads on me over the last 2 weeks.
$75 million being spent saying Donald Trump is orange. He looks like someone from Whoville. I don't know if you guys aren't old enough to remember QT. QT stood for quick tanning lotion. It came out in the 60s or 70s. And it basically made you look orange. And it made the palms of your hands stay orange for a while. Donald Trump is wearing QT, man. The fucker's orange.
Are they catching on at all?
No.
What do you think? Are they catching on?
No.
They're vicious.
That?
They're spending a tremendous amount on negative ads on me.
No.
See, the funny thing is they are spending a lot of money, but they don't have to search very far to find content. Donald Trump, let's bomb the shit out of them. Now, is that a presidential thing you'd say, like, President of the United States of America? And all of a sudden, guy comes out and he goes, we're going to bomb the shit out of those bitches. Do you want that guy as your president? Like you said, I'm not crazy about him, but I am crazy about the fact he's cracking the GOP like a melting piece of ice. Okay, here we go.
You know what I thought was the kind of wow moment was the guy you brought up on stage.
Yeah, that was cool. We played it several times this morning.
We played it up against Obama.
Both guys.
No, I get it. They're news people. He's running for president. They are below him. They're kissing his ass. They're in a commercial break. Jesus. This is your mainstream media. These aren't people that are going, Mr. Trump, I've got some difficult questions to ask you. You know, like holding you to the fire like, I don't know, 60 Minutes used to do in the 70s before corporations owned your media and basically bitch slapped them and turned them into a bunch of, should I quote Gary Johnson, pussies.
Both guys.
Oh, it is. We played Obama first.
The young guy
and then
was
we played
champ.
The guys. I saw it on what you showed this morning.
We played Obama first, and then we played the black fellow we brought on stage to make you look glorious.
Almost as a legendary figure, I like.
Well, I tell you, this morning, what we basically said today was we were completely wrong about the
totally.
Debate. We have one more segment?
One more segment, and then we're good. Thank you for doing this.
Okay. I'm doing it because...
Okay, now, here's the part you need to check out. He essentially is going to ask them to throw him softballs. And they will suck it like a pro.
I said, you know, you get great ratings in a race. Mm-hmm. Me, I get nothing.
We're getting a real window into your... So...
Well... Just make us all look good. That's right.
See? Just make us look all... Just make...
Window into your... So...
Well... Just make us all look good. That's right.
Exactly.
That's Joe Scarborough. That's right. We all want to look good, right? Who cares if we actually get to some substance? We actually hold this man's feet to the fire and ask him why he says the things he does. No, let's kiss his ass. Let's give him three times the amount of airtime than any other candidate.
How come Drudge and Time Magazine said I won the debate, Joe, and you think...
Well, but so did the CBS poll. The next morning when I saw the CBS poll,
so that
I knew...
Second, but they
yeah,
have.
But still, I knew that the people that mattered didn't think you lost it. You came in a strong second. And I'll tell you what was the most revealing thing is Bush came in last.
Yeah, came in last.
The guy you fought
weak.
Came in last.
He's a weak person.
And at that point, I said to Mika, we don't know what... You know,
he's a weak person.
He's a weak person.
He's a weak person.
He's a weak person. That's the fifth time I've said that.
Okay. You don't,
and I'm orange.
Want me to do...
Okay, listen. You don't want me to do the ones with deportation. In other words, they're literally asking him the questions they can or cannot ask him.
The ones with deportation.
We really have to get some...
We really have to edit some questions.
Yeah. That's right.
That's right. Nothing too hard.
We have to get some questions.
That's right. Nothing too hard, Mika.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Trump. We won't ask you any fucking hard questions. That might be us, I don't know, doing our jobs? Oh, wrong button. You know, when you do talk radio and you have your own studio and you're playing sound and you have music to play and drop-ins to play and you have all these things you're doing and you always press the wrong button. Yeah, that's me. That's me. So there's your first piece of audio tonight. Don't ask me anything hard. Okay. No problem. That was from a while ago, by the way. This next one is from Cenk from the Young Turks. Now, he used to be on MSNBC, but he didn't want to paint inside the lines. He didn't want to be Joe Scarborough. He's like, I'm sorry, but there are too many important things to talk about and too many topics to get to. And they showed him the door. What did he do? He built his own network. Huh? New media? What? What? By the way, that's for you, Dave the Vet. You don't like my bell? Fuck you. I actually had to take the show off a week ago because I had the flu 2 weeks ago. And he goes, that's okay. I could do a week without the bell. There you go. What are you going to do? Skip past this? You going to edit it? That's the freedom. Okay. Bernie Sanders upsets Hillary Clinton. She was expected to win Michigan, and he beat her by about a point and a half. Very tight race, according to the voting machines, which I don't know if I trust or not. But I do know that the mainstream media, now this time around you can hear Cenk talk about a newspaper, the Washington Post. Now remember, we always hear the phrase liberal media, the liberal media. Well, this liberal media, by the way, MSNBC, liberal, what do? They just kiss Trump's ass. Now we've got the Washington Post, which is part of the liberal media. Listen to these headlines. And it's great. It is great that people are calling this out. Okay, here we go.
Okay, so over the weekend, Bernie Sanders won 3 out of 4 states.
Oh, this is before Michigan. I'm sorry. Michigan was yesterday. Yeah, Tuesday. And the 3 out of 4 states was over the weekend. And yeah, so basically of the last 5 states, Bernie Sanders has won 4 of them.
Okay, so over the weekend, Bernie Sanders won 3 out of 4 states, Kansas, Nebraska, and Maine. And so the mainstream media either largely ignored it or in the case of Washington Post decided to go on the attack. They already wrote a scathing and malicious op-ed against Bernie Sanders full of lies. Now, keep in mind, they're part of the Washington establishment, and their owner is worth $50 billion and is a libertarian who does not want to pay higher taxes. So what do? After Bernie Sanders wins, they have 16 headlines in 16 hours. I'm going to read them to you, okay? Listen to this. Bernie Sanders pledges the U.S. won't be number one in incarceration. He'll need to release a lot of criminals.
Bernie Sanders is talking about the war on drugs and that roughly 50% of the people behind bars have something to do with it. In other words, they're nonviolent criminals. They were just caught selling drugs. They didn't murder anybody. They didn't rape anybody. They didn't kill anybody. This is the war on drugs. And Bernie Sanders, much like Gary Johnson, much like Jill Stein, how many other people running for president are talking about the prison industrial complex and the war on drugs, and we need to end both of those? So Sanders isn't the only one talking about this waste of trillions of dollars since 1972. But that's what he was referring to. What does this newspaper say? Well, he's going to have to release a lot of criminals. Fear! Run away from Bernie! He's going to put rapists in your neighborhood!
Second headline. Clinton is running for president. Sanders is doing something else.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of some of Bernie's stances. He's not as anti-war as I am. He doesn't give a shit about Palestine for some reason. Sanders, Bernie, hey, you know, open your heart. You're opening your minds about other people in our country. Got to keep an open mind about the planet. What else? Okay, Jill Stein's into reparations for slavery. I'm not into that. And, you know, so in other words, it's impossible to love any candidate. Oh, by the way, a socialist program is going to take taxpayer money and it's going to apply it to something. So Bernie Sanders doesn't really have to change much. All he has to do is stop spending so much fucking money on the military industrial complex, which is 55% of our budget, maybe cut it back. And then next thing you know, yeah, some of those social programs will fund themselves. Infrastructure, jobs, pushing the minimum wage up. So I like a lot of what Bernie talks about. Obviously, you got to cut the heads of the snake. You got to get to the banks. You got to break them up. They're too powerful. This has happened before in history. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last. Okay? Standard Oil was broken up in the early 1900s because John Rockefeller simply had a too powerful monopoly. And the country came in and said, no, we're going to break it up. He made way more money, stocks and everything and everything else. But it also gave rise to about 50 different energy companies. Well, now we're down to 4. See what happened again? Same thing with the banks. Same thing with big oil. Same thing with Big Pharma now. So I like what Bernie has to say. I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan because, honestly, I don't trust the voting process. But what I like about him is at least he's talking a little bit about the reality that we live in. Instead of pretending the banks didn't fuck us over in 2008, he's calling them out. Hang on a second. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I like a lot of what Jill Stein has to say. I like what Gary Johnson, by the way, we'll get to the Gary Johnson audio in a little while here. We'll do probably the surface level politics early on. But we'll also get to what's being said. All right, Cenk, go for a little while here.
These are real headlines from the Washington Post, the so-called liberal media. 3, this is huge. Trump, Sanders, both using same catchphrase. So now he's in Democratic primaries, so this is a hatchet job against him. Oh, he's just like Trump. 4, mental health patients to Bernie Sanders don't compare us to the GOP candidates. 5, excuse me, I'm talking. Bernie Sanders shuts down Hillary Clinton repeatedly. He actually said that line once. I've lost count now. I think 6. Bernie Sanders, 2 big lies about the global economy. What happened? I thought you guys were supposed to be objective, and you never call the Republican lies. Now it's Bernie Sanders. All of a sudden, headline, lies from Bernie Sanders. Fascinating. I wonder which way the media bias goes. All right, next one. 5 reasons Bernie Sanders lost last night's Democratic debate. The online polls all indicate he won the debate. Washington Post says, here's why he definitively lost the debate, according to them. An awkward reality for Bernie Sanders, a strategy focused on whiter states. As if the most liberal senator in the country, and they've criticized him for being that liberal, is actually racist because he's going for whiter states.
This guy, yeah, remember in the 60s, there are pictures of him marching in the South for equal rights for African Americans. Now, remember, a lot of this is just attack politics. But it's attack politics because people from his direct competitor, of course, Hillary Clinton, which is the establishment's choice for president. Bernie he wasn't expected, and the wave that came up under him, much like the Ron Paul wave, from more of a GOP, middle-of-the-road conservative, far more libertarian, the system just basically never let him in. And any time he'd even won a debate, they'd list him 3rd or they wouldn't even put him there. So as you pick up your newspaper the next day and you're reading your paper and you're riding the train and you're on your way to work, you're like, oh, who won the debate? Oh, Hillary. Okay, boom. Because you got a busy life. Not everybody's got a chance to do all that stuff. So the establishment, which is the oligarchy, which is what Carlin talks about, your owners, people that can print money out of thin air, people that own the Federal Reserve. That's power. When you can print money, you've got power. You got incredible power. Because not only can you print it into existence, you can loan it at interest. That's the head of the snake. Now, the banks he talks about, those are like a couple of tiers down. Citibank and Wells Fargo and all these banks. They don't do that. They're the distributors of the upper, piece of the pyramid, I guess we'll call it. So Bernie Sanders is still in the system. He's, a Democrat, or he's independent, running in the Democratic process. He's been within it for many, many years. Libertarians don't care about Bernie. You know what I care about? Someone who's actually talking about the actual reasons things suck. And he's calling out powerful, rich oligarchs. Will he win? No. Not unless the convention is some type of crazy, topsy-turvy thing, which is the next audio we'll get to about superdelegates. I'll let Cenk go for a couple more minutes, and you'll get an understanding of how one newspaper in a 24-hour period on their website went on the attack. Because this man is messing with the establishment's next, Barack Obama's the establishment's selection. You think it's an election. It's a selection. Same thing with Hillary. Same thing. Bernie is kind of like a fly in the ointment from within the system. And I think that's why I like it so much, because It is from within the system.
And it's awkward. Okay, nice implication. Next, Bernie Sanders says white people don't know what it's like to live in a ghetto. About that. Dot, dot, dot. Same implication. Next, the NRA just praised Bernie Sanders and did him no favors of doing so. See, another one implying that the most liberal senator is actually conservative. Next, even Bernie Sanders can beat Donald Trump. What do you mean, even Bernie Sanders? He's beating Donald Trump by a bigger margin than Hillary Clinton is in every single poll. Look at the framing on that. Okay, next, what Bernie Sanders still doesn't get about arguing with Hillary Clinton. Next, why Obama says bank reform is a success, but Bernie Sanders says it's a failure. He's in a Democratic primary. See, he's against Obama. And that goes to show you bias more than anything else, because these guys are actually conservative. But they're writing it as if they're liberals, concerned that Bernie Sanders isn't liberal enough, while they write an editorial on the other hand saying he's way too liberal. Which one is it, Washington Post? Basically, you hate him, and you don't want the tax cuts, and you want to protect the establishment.
Boom. Done. There it is. Now, the bad news is, well, as in last week's show where I played you the audio of people that were told to design hackable voting machines and testifying in court to do so. So am I a big fan of the tally? No. Karl Marx. I care not who votes. I care who counts the votes. Okay? So I'm not a big fan of the system. I'm a fan of the conversation that makes it into the public arena, because that's how you change the consciousness of people. You bring a new idea, you bring a concept, you bring evidence. Oh, does that create change? Yes, it does. It creates a wave of change behind the system's little presentations of Barack, and Hillary will be the next one. But what's happening is, and thanks to the internet and shows like this and every other show you've ever listened to, that's where the change is coming. People are getting a chance to go, did you hear what Cenk just said about that newspaper article? Did you hear what Ledge said about superdelegates? That's where the change is taking place. And that's what I'm a fan of. The system, it's pretty much locked up and owned for now. I need to add that for now. This is a comedy piece. And again, since it's visual in nature, but I'm going to let it only runs 3 minutes. I might, you know what? I'm going to let it run straight, because it does a great job of describing the difference between, if Bernie wins a state, wouldn't he have those delegates on his side in the convention? At the convention. No, not at all. And this is the sad part of how the system is rigged.
To get all democratic and whatnot, change the world.
What's up, man?
Guys smoking weed.
Voting? We don't even live in a democracy, man.
First of all, how much are you selling that weed for? Is that perp? Second of all, of course we live in a democracy.
Actually, he's kind
of
right.
All right, first of all, let me get your number. Second of all, can I get some privacy?
Isn't it strange that we vote in little cubicles? Like, there's something to be embarrassed about. Well, there is, and it's our democratic process.
Hey, I'm voting for Bernie Sanders, and he's going to fix that.
Is he?
You can't fix a broken system, bro.
Especially if you don't plan on winning.
Wait, what?
Oh, let me introduce you to a delegate.
Oh, hi.
He's an unelected official from the Democratic Party who votes on behalf of you.
Like the Electoral College?
Also an incredibly undemocratic system that has ensured a choice between only two parties for the entire history of the United States. But no, it's not like that. I'd say it's worse. Behold, the superdelegate.
Guy is literally dressed in a Superman outfit. Just so you know.
Unelected, with the power of 10,000 votes, free to do as he pleases.
I will vote for Bernie Sanders.
No, you will vote for Hillary Clinton.
I will vote for Hillary Clinton.
Their job is to vote for the establishment candidates. In this case, Hillary. Or, let me just let the head of the DNC explain it to you.
Unpledged delegates.
That's a woman pretending.
Really only exists so that party leaders and elected officials.
To be Debbie Wasserman, who is the actual head of the DNC. And she's going to explain to you again what. In other words, you go vote. And you go, wow, Sanders beat Hillary in Michigan. That means he will win that state when the convention happens. It doesn't work that way.
Party leaders and elected officials don't get put in the position where they are running against grassroots activists.
What?
By the way, she actually said that. Wasserman said that they won't have In other words, the establishment candidate won't have to worry about a grassroots movement because it's rigged.
Yeah. Hillary's already hundreds of delegates ahead of Bernie.
10,058 to 431.
Before it even started.
Why hasn't Bernie said anything about this?
Good question, Bernie. His supporters definitely have. There's already a bunch of petitions with a few hundred thousand signatures politely asking superdelegates to vote the will of the people. And Congressman Alan Grayson has adorably put his superdelegate vote up for a vote. But why do we have to ask the Democratic Party to be democratic?
What we need is a revolution, man.
Well, Bernie is apparently calling for one. But so far, it stops just short of criticizing the party that might just steal the election from him.
Why, Bernie? Why?
We can only speculate. Or we can ask Bernie to talk about it at the next debate on March 6th in Flint, Michigan. Bernie, ask the Democratic Party why they're so undemocratic. And please, let's get rid of these guys.
Shh, come on. I just had this outfit custom made. So maybe we could just talk about this in 4 years so I can break it in, you know?
Okay, no. For real, let's get rid of these guys right now. And whether you're a Bernie fan or not, we cannot be a democracy with voters like this guy.
It's still a democracy. I'm just 10,000 times more important than you.
Okay, you know, everybody just go back to your boxes of shame and vote.
Superman, it's still a democracy. I'm just 10,000 times more important than your single vote. The superdelegate.
Vote for Bernie, you know, because the DNC.
I'm voting for Trump.
What's wrong with you? Let's not do something crazy.
That is the way the system is rigged. People think, wow, if Bernie comes to, you know, Florida is here on Tuesday, and if Bernie Sanders, he won't win, not in this state. There's too much old wealth in the state of Florida, and people that have a lot of money, they're worried about having their taxes taken to a higher level. And they know Hillary is the establishment insert. So unless something dramatic happens, I doubt very much that Hillary will lose the state of Florida. But where Bernie actually wins, and like I said, over the weekend and yesterday, he won four out of five states. It doesn't matter because those superdelegates can do whatever they want. And what do you think they're going to do? They're going to keep the gig. They're going to play by. They're going to play ball. It's like, Johnny Dangerously with Danny DeVito. You going to play ball? You going to play by the system? Well, outside of the system are people called libertarians. And though I do jibe with a tiny bit of conservatism, I jibe with a pretty healthy amount of liberalism, and I jibe with a good amount of libertarianism because I'm my own person. To put myself inside of any one box, I think I do myself a disservice, but I also allow the system to do that. Well, Gary Johnson ran for president 4 years ago. I think he got like 2.5-3% of the vote, nothing huge. But there was a debate the other day where Gary Johnson, and I think this is just essentially just a political move on his point, but he called Trump a pussy. Now, he called him a pussy on stage, and then there's this explanation here I'm going to play to you that he called him a pussy. He called him a pussy two more times. All right, Gary.
Kind of a misfire on my part when I called him a pussy. Donald Trump's a pussy.
This is a man running for president, right? Sorry. And he goes, Donald Trump's a pussy. In other words, say what you want.
Fuck Tucker. Tucker sucks.
That's right.
But the point was that, you know what? I've climbed the highest mountain on each of the seven continents. I'm going to do a 3,000-mile mountain bike ride.
He climbs mountains. He's in great shape. He rides a mountain bike, but he's still insecure and wears a horrible toupee. Horrible toupee. If anybody is close to this man, go, Gary, dump the toupee. Or just, you know, do the Shatner toupee. Do the David Letterman. Just do the small, close-to-the-head hairpiece. Don't do the big, fluffy fucking thing on the top of your head. What is that? Oh, my God. Can you tell I'm enjoying my buzzer bar tonight? All right, Gary, you're up.
here, upcoming. Trump's a pussy. I think that Donald Trump alienates more than a pussy. I think that Trump's a pussy. Ming, Trump's a pussy. Trump's a pussy.
He's looking right into the camera when he says it. Now, you know, I don't ever remember, you know, Richard Nixon telling the world that anybody else, or John F. Fuck it, I'm not doing voices. John F. Kennedy ever call anybody a pussy? Into a camera? I'm sure he said it when no one was around. I got Trump going, bomb the shit out of him. And I got this guy calling him a pussy.
I think that Donald Trump alienates more than half of Republicans. Deporting 11 million illegal immigrants, building a fence across the border, killing the families of Islamic terrorists. Free market, but I'm going to force Apple to make their iPads and their iPhones in the United States. If it gets down to being in the presidential debates and he's got anything to say about me, which I'm sure he will, I'll just start off the fact that he's a pussy.
You know, I wish I could make this up, but it's better when they do it. Oh, man, that's awesome. That's just awesome. excuse me, Senator, what do you think of Donald Trump?
He's a fucking pussy.
It's like just bringing Joe Pesci to beat the snot out of him. You think I'm amusing? All right, let's go. Let's lighten it up. Are you done with politics? So am I. It's about all I can do is about an hour. Then I just go, ugh, I'm over it completely. All righty, we're going to scroll on down, and we're going to find... I'm just going to do a lot of stories. It's a combination of either these stories are about Big Pharma or cannabis or both. This is from an AOL.com news story. I'm not sure if the audio is going to work on this. I've had some issues with their website. So what I'm going to do is, you know what? Let's just read it. It'll work better that way. More Americans than ever are overdosing on anxiety drugs. This is researchers reported Thursday. That would be a week ago. It's an older story. The new study finds that not only that more Americans are taking the drugs, which include brand names as Valium and Xanax, but they're taking more of them. But while the quantity of prescriptions, the quantity of prescriptions filled tripled between 96 and 2013, the number of overdoses quadrupled during the same period, the team reported in the American Journal of Public Health. We found that the death rate from overdoses involving, benzodiazepines. That's the only time. You know what? Save that audio because that's the only time I'll get that right. Also known as benzos. They used to call them bennies in the old days. Overdoses from that drug have increased at a much faster rate than the prescriptions for the drugs. So think about that. As people create more tolerance, they add more substance. If they need more substance, then the amount of prescriptions go up. But even at that rate that it's going up, the overdoses have outpaced that. That's a horrible sign. That also shows the danger of the drug. More than 5% of U.S. adults fill out the benzo prescription every year. 5% for such as anxiety, mood disorders, and insomnia. That's all you need to know from that story. And by the way, yes, cannabis. A, it's not addictive. B, you can't overdose. C, there's many different kinds to use. And D, if it was actually legal, you would have your choice of candies, inhaling, consumables like cookies and everything else, and brownies. You could get into vaping. A lot of different ways to actually just deliver it to your system. That's the best part of it. All right, let's do this story next. A combination here of, like I said, between stories about Big Pharma and five new cannabis discoveries you won't hear on the mainstream media. Men who smoke pot possess a reduced risk of bladder cancer. Man, they're doing so many great studies now. You can't even keep up with the amount they're doing. Is cannabis use protective against the development of certain type of cancers? The finding of a just-released study out of Kaiser Permanente Los Angeles Department of Neurology assessed that the association of cannabis use and tobacco smoking on the risk of bladder cancer in a multi-theic cohort of more than 80,000 men. That's a good cross segment. When you're doing a study, that's a lot of people. Between the age of 45 and 69, you know what? I'm right in the middle of that. And old over an 11 year period. Wow, this is a great study. The results, while men who smoked cigarettes possessed a 1.5-fold increase of cancer, those who only smoked pot possessed a 45% reduced risk. All right? So if you're just smoking cigs, you have a 1.5 chance. In other words, if 1.0 represents the average person getting cancer, you have almost almost twice the chance. But if you only smoke cannabis, you reduce that by 0.5. How about that? Or 0.45, which is essentially you're right back at average. In other words, cannabis helps you. After adjusting for age, ethnic, and body mass index, using tobacco only was associated with an increased risk of bladder cancer, 1.52, whereas cannabis was only associated with 45% reduction in bladder cancer. That's awesome. I mean, a lot of people don't get that. But we've been bombarded with the paranoia of cannabis for 100 years. Son of a bitch. Yeah, I know. All right, let's pick at least one more cannabis story. Let's go with some bad news on cannabis here. Because things are getting better, but there's still people facing a lot of shit. A canceled Cannabis Cup show is now a legal fight, and it's only just begun. If you thought there'd be nothing for marijuana legalizers to be fighting for after legalization, well, you're wrong. Legalization is just the beginning of the real fight, which is the freedom to use cannabis as equally as people who use what? Alcohol, tobacco, aspirin, right? Caffeine. You know my stand, okay, this is a personal blog, on the true legalizers who say, quote, see, it's not only really legalization. It's not really legalization. If you have to fight to have a cannabis cup in a state, Seattle, Portland, Denver, ring a bell, the two states where cannabis is legal, and you want to legally do it and have a whole bunch of people get together and share that, much like, I don't know, Oktoberfest, an entire fucking month in Germany where people just hammer the beer because beer is legal and they're celebrating it. Well, all these 420 events are now facing the typical roadblock. It sucks. Man, it sucks. Seattle cannot have a cannabis cup or any sort of public token lounge, in other words, anything outside of a building, private residence, because the state of Washington passed a law that felonizes the operation of any club or event that directly or indirectly promotes and allows the consumption of cannabis, even though it's legal in the state of Washington. How fucked up is that? People voted in and go, you know what? I want to be able to do it when I want to do it legally. And guess what? On April 20th, when tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people want to get together and celebrate that, much like, again, like an Oktoberfest, they can't do it. They're not allowed. How stupid is that? Ugh. I told you it was a bad news. All right, give me one more good news. I'm looking. Let me see. We've got, let's do a hemp story here. We'll do a hemp story. because, you know, listen, if you listen to this podcast and you have been for the last 3 years, then you realize there is a difference between cannabis and hemp. Hemp will give you the food, which is the seeds. You eat them. They don't have the THC. Essentially, hemp doesn't have THC, which is the part that gets you high. They have the CBD, which is also being turned into meds, but we're finding it's incredibly healthy to eat for your immune system, for your endocrine system. Okay, then there's the products. Hemp can be turned into fuel. Hemp, you know, obviously fibers. If anybody has ever written on a piece of hemp paper, it looks just like regular paper until you try to tear it, and then you realize the fibers are far stronger than wood pulp paper. So the hemp side of the cannabis conversation isn't about getting high, man. It's not about getting high being, you know, dude. No, it's about farmers, and I think I read an article not too long ago. It's about $200 an acre in profit. I'm sorry, $2,000 an acre in profit. So if you got, you know, if you got a lot of acres and you want to grow a lot of hemp and it only takes 16 weeks, it's good for the soil. By the way, you can grow hemp 3 out of 4 years on the same land. You don't need pesticides. You don't need any of the fertilizers that come from big oil. It's only been around for 250,000 years. We've been using it as a species for about 12,000 years, maybe 15. So check it out. A construction company owner out of Minnesota has just gotten the right to grow himself some hemp. I'm committed to grow on our farmland, and with all the benefits and uses, it's going to be incredible, he said. I'm also a general contractor, and I'm excited about all of the different building products that can come from industrial hemp. There are homes in North Carolina being built from hempcrete. It looks like concrete, but it's not. It doesn't degrade. It doesn't transfer cold and heat like cold stone concrete does. By the way, it gets stronger as it ages. Right on down the line, it's CO2 friendly. It absorbs CO2. The walls of your house would absorb CO2. That's how cool hemp is. So that's what he's talking about when he's talking about the actual building materials. Hellberg will get his chance this spring. This is in Minnesota, by the way. The state just received a permit from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration for an industrial hemp pilot project. The Aggies officials here say they'll soon begin looking for farmers and others who want to plant hemp test plots, the first legal planted hemp in the state in more than half a century. God bless it. That's just so cool. That is just too cool. Now we see it in Kentucky. Oh, believe me, almost every time I turn around, even Georgia. I mean, you think of the cotton in Georgia? Ever driven through those fields in the back roads? It just goes on for acres and acres and acres. Guess what? Hemp is making its way everywhere. There are cars built out of hemp. Henry Ford, 100 years ago, built his Model Ts out of hemp. Now there's brand new sports cars because the fiber is so strong, it's going up there. It's like Kevlar. It's that kind of thing. It's super light, which means your car is going to get great gas mileage and super strong, that if you decide to wrap it around a tree, it's not going to be like some piece of tin or steel that's just going to bend. It's going to absorb the kinetic energy. So the best thing about hemp is what? Yes, the windows are open because it's super nice here in Florida right now. All right, you know what? I'm already 8 past the hour on, and I'm thinking I've got to get a Carlin's Corner in, and I want to get a tune in, because if I get that tune in and I want to play a new band, they're technically not a real new band. Let me see. Let me find it right there. There we go. And that's what we'll do. We'll do with that. I can't play you too many tunes tonight. Normally I try to get at least one or two in. This is a quickie. The Carlin's Corner is a rather long one, but George being George, he explains why mankind in this country can't find a way to deal with homelessness because there's no profit in it. And that's really what makes the, you know, pisses me off when I think about it. But, yeah. So I'll tell you what. Why don't we break now, get our break underway. We'll play you a tune. We'll do some Carlin's Corner. And then I'll probably come back with, man, I got so much audio to do. Let me see. What? Yeah, I know. Didn't expect that rant tonight for the opening monologue. And I am so, oh, you know what? We'll talk a little GMO when we come back. I have friends that are so pro-GMO, you know. Oh, it's going to help feed starving people. I'm like, yeah, it's going to turn us into guinea pigs. You're changing the genetic makeup of a plant. And you're saying, oh, well, the bugs won't eat it now. Well, guess what? Nature finds a way. Is that Goldblum? Yeah, Jeff Goldblum said that. Jurassic Park. Nature does find a way. That's how it works. All right, I'll tell you what. We'll come on back. We'll do a tune. We'll do some Carlin's Corner. And we'll come back with more Dangerous Conversation right here at RadioInfluence.com.
Scott Ledger.
On the air.
By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner.
Ledge.
That's why we call it Dangerous Conversation.
You are talking about the nonsensical ravings of a lunatic mind.
What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What's your plan for tomorrow? Are you a leader or will you follow? Are you a fighter or will you cower? It's our time to take back the power. What you gonna do when they show up in black suits on your street and our mid boots? Gonna say when they strip your rights away and the tax man makes you pay for everything I sweat. Just so unjust, and the jury must discuss. Say you don't look like one of us. We're gonna turn. Now the court has been adjourned, and the lessons that you've learned are not as many as the prison burn.
Whoa.
crazy now.
Scott Ledger.
That wordsmith who will whisper all the wonders of the world.
Are you the little guy making all that big noise?
I'll tell you the truth, I don't really feature listening to a replay of last night. You know, it's kind of depressing.
Where's the morality in that? I don't understand our values. By the way, speaking of American values, aren't we about due to start bombing some small country that only has a marginally effective air force? Seems to me like we're a couple of weeks overdue to drop high explosives on helpless civilians. People who have no argument with us whatsoever. I think we ought to be out there doing what we do best, gang, making big holes in other people's countries. I'd hate to be repetitious, but God, we are a warlike lot, you know? We can't stand not to be fucking with somebody. We couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over, could we? Just couldn't wait for that Cold War to be over so we could go and play with our toys in the sand. Go play with our... Cold War to be over so we could go and play with our toys in the sand. Go play with our toys in the sand. And when we're not invading some sovereign nation or setting it on fire from the air, which is more fun, then we're usually declaring war on something here at home. Did you ever notice that? We love to do that, don't we? We'd love to declare war on things here in America. Anything we don't like about ourselves, we have to declare war on it. Don't do anything about it, but we just declare war on it. We got a war. It's the only metaphor we have in our public discourse for solving a problem. It's called declaring a war. We got a war on poverty, the war on crime, war on litter, the war on cancer, the war on drugs. But you ever notice there's no war on homelessness, is there? Nah, no war on homelessness. You know why? There's no money in that problem. There's no money in that problem. Nobody stands. It's true. Nobody stands to get rich off of that problem. You could find a solution to homelessness where the corporate swine and the politicians could steal a couple of $1 million each. You'd see the streets of America begin to clear up pretty goddamn quick. I'll guarantee you that. I will guarantee you that. Now, so, I got an idea for homelessness. You know what they ought to do? You know what they ought to do? Give the homeless their own magazine. Give them their own magazine. It would make them feel better, for one thing. That's a sure sign of making it in this country. Every group in this country that makes it and arrives at a certain level has its own magazine. You have Working Mother magazine, Black Entrepreneur magazine, Hispanic Business magazine. In fact, any activity engaged in by more than four people in this country has got a fucking magazine devoted to it. Skydiving, mountain climbing, snowmobiling, backpacking, bungee jumping, duck hunting, shooting someone in the asshole with a dart gun, jerking off, they probably have a magazine for that. I'm sure they have. I know they have a magazine. Walking! There's actually a fucking magazine called Walking. Look, Dan, the new Walking is out. Here's a good article, putting one foot in front of the other. Give them their own magazine. Give them. Give the homeless their own magazine. You know what you call it? Better Crates and Cartons. Then when they get finished reading it, they can use it to line their clothing. That's a good sound business solution. That's the kind of answer you get from a conservative American businessman. Yeah, let them read it. When they get finished reading, they can use it to plug up the holes and them piano crates they all seem to like to live in. A good sound, practical, conservative American business solution. I'll tell you what they ought to do about homelessness. First thing, change the name of it. Change the name of the condition. It's not homelessness. It's houselessness. It's houses these people need. A home is an abstract idea. A home is a setting. It's a state of mind. These people need houses. Physical, tangible structures. But where are you going to put them? Where are you going to build them? Nobody wants you to build low-cost housing near their house. People don't want it near them. We got something in this country. You've heard of it. It's called NIMBY. N-I-M-B-Y.
Not in my backyard.
People don't want any kind of social help located anywhere near them. You try to open up a halfway house. Try to open up a rehab center for drugs or alcohol. Try to build a little home for some retarded people who want to work their way into the community. People say, not in my backyard. People don't want anything near them, especially if it might help somebody else. Part of the great American spirit of generosity we're always told about. Big, generous American nation.
Ask an Indian about that.
Remarkable.
Ask an Indian how generous this country is. If you can find one, you got to locate the Indian first. We've made him just a little difficult to find. Or if you need current data, select a black family at random and ask them how generous this country has been. People don't want anything near them, even if it's something they believe in, something they think society needs, like prisons. Everybody wants that, right? Everybody wants more prisons. That's the new answer to all of our problems. Lock a lot of motherfuckers up. Everybody wants more prisons. They say, build more prisons! But not here. But why not? What's wrong? What's the problem? What's wrong with having a prison in your neighborhood? Would seem to me like it would make it a pretty crime-free area, don't you think? You think a lot of crackheads and muggers and pimps and hookers are going to be hanging around in front of a fucking prison? Bullshit, they ain't coming anywhere near it. What's wrong with these people? All the criminals are locked up behind the walls. And if a couple of them do break out, what do you think they're going to do? Hang around? Check real estate trends? Bullshit! They're fucking gone! That's the whole idea of breaking out of prison, is to get the fuck as far away as you possibly can. Not in my backyard. People don't want anything near them. Except military bases. They don't mind that, do they? No, they like that. Give them an army base. Makes them happy. Why? Jobs. Jobs. Self-interest. Even if the base is loaded with nuclear weapons, they don't give a fuck. They say, well, I'll take a little radiation if I can get a job. Working people have been fucked over so long in this country, those are the kind of decisions they're left to make. I got just a place for low-cost housing. I have solved this problem. I know where we can build housing for the homeless. Golf courses. Perfect. Golf courses. Just what we need. Plenty of good land in nice neighborhoods. Land that is currently being wasted on a meaningless, mindless activity engaged in primarily by white, well-to-do male businessmen who use the game to get together to make deals to carve this country up a little finer among themselves. I am getting tired. Really tired. I am getting tired of these golfing cocksuckers in their green pants. And their yellow pants, and their orange pants, and their precious little hats, and their cute little golf carts. It is time to reclaim the golf courses from the wealthy and turn them over to the homeless. Golf is an arrogant, elitist game, and it takes up entirely too much fucking room in this country. Too much fucking room in this country. It is an arrogant game on its very design alone. Just the design of the game speaks of arrogance. Think of how big a golf course is. The ball is that fucking big. What do these pinheaded pricks need with all that land? There are over 17,000 golf courses in America. They average over 150 acres apiece. That's over 3 million acres. That's 4,820 square miles. You could build two Rhode Islands and a Delaware for the homeless on the land currently devoted to this meaningless, mindless, arrogant, elitist, racist. Racist. There's another thing. The only blacks you'll find in country clubs are carrying trays. And a boring game. For boring people. Did you ever watch golf on television? It's like watching flies fuck. And a mindless game. Mindless. Think of the intellect. Think of the intellect it must take to draw pleasure from this activity. Hitting a ball with a crooked stick and then walking after it. And then hitting it again. I say, pick it up, asshole. You're lucky you found the fucking thing. Put it in your pocket and go the fuck home. Go the fuck home. You're a winner. No. No chance of that happening. Dorko in the plaid knickers is going to hit it again and walk some more. Let these rich cocksuckers play miniature golf. Let them fuck with a windmill for an hour and a half or so. See if there's any real skill among them. Now, I know there are some people who play golf who don't consider themselves rich. Fuck them. And shame on them for engaging in an arrogant, elitist pastime. Hey, here's another place we could put some low-cost housing. Cemeteries. There's another idea whose time has passed. Saving all the dead people in one part of town? What the hell kind of a superstitious, religious, medieval bullshit idea is that?
Plow these motherfuckers up. Plow them into the streams and rivers of America. We need that phosphorus for farming. If we're going to recycle, let's get serious.
A new kind of horror show.
You're out on the ledge.
He puts his arms around you. You can't see him, but you feel his presence.
Ledger.
My parents used to go, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Would you think for yourself?
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Ledger.
Far more than an unexpectedly hard-fought Democratic primary. Its greater implication, whether Sanders wins or loses, America's crony capitalism will no longer go completely unchallenged.
The same old will not work.
At the same time, however, the equally stunning ascent of Donald Trump means that America is in danger of becoming unhinged.
Build a wall! Build a wall!
Sanders and Trump are opposite reactions to the same problem. America's financial elites are now so corrupt, arrogant, and predatory that political leaders beholden to them can no longer reliably deliver economic or political security, much less fairness or progress for the American people. And now Americans have run out of patience.
People are just very, very unhappy with the status quo.
American politics is now truly fundamentally up for grabs for the first time in decades. A hugely exciting but also terrifying prospect.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total, complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States. You have no choice.
In America, the Great Depression yielded Franklin D. Roosevelt and the New Deal. In Europe, the Depression created Hitler and Mussolini. So America's reaction against its corruption and decline could bring out our best or our worst. Indeed, this is the Democratic establishment's rejoinder to Bernie Sanders. If he loses, we'd get an insane Neanderthal running the country.
I'm gonna bomb the shit out of him.
And furthermore, even if Bernie was elected, he couldn't get anything done. No way could Bernie break up the banks, for example. Only a pragmatic, moderate insider can get anywhere now. Actually, the truth is the opposite. American insider politics is now so corrupt and dysfunctional that nobody within it can get anything done. Start with Hillary Clinton and the banks.
You made three speeches for Goldman Sachs. You were paid $675,000.
The full reality is much worse. Bill Clinton made Robert Rubin, former president of Goldman Sachs, his treasury secretary, then appointed Larry Summers and Laura Tyson afterwards to succeed him, and reappointed Alan Greenspan as chairman of the Fed. Together, they let the banks run amok. In fact, they helped them. They repealed Glass-Steagall, banned the regulation of derivatives, refused to use the Fed's authority to regulate the mortgage industry, and did nothing as securities fraud permeated the internet bubble. After leaving office, both Bill and Hillary made millions of dollars giving speeches to the banks while being remarkably quiet about the prosecution of financial crime. Now Hillary says she'll rely on Bill for economic policy. Bad idea. But could Bernie do any better? Well, he could appoint an attorney general and a head of the Department of Justice criminal division who haven't spent their entire careers defending corporate criminals, and he could invite the Justice Department to put lots of bankers in jail. Sanders could also appoint an antitrust division head who would actually investigate the many cozy cartel-like arrangements that pervade finance and bring major antitrust cases against the banks. He could appoint a Federal Reserve chair who would require banks to divest assets and operate safely, and regulate bankers' compensation so that if they caused a disaster, they couldn't profit from it personally. All this could be done without a single new law. But win or lose, Bernie Sanders has given us the opportunity to create a powerful, enduring, progressive reform movement. And we need one. Insider politics in America is totally broken. But fascism isn't the answer.
Here's Ledge.
Some of you know me as Mikey Gaga. Some of you know me as Joey Boombatz.
He's crazy, he's a fool, but he's not a liar.
This is not a conversation for children.
Look, I don't think you're crazy. I know you're not a terrorist. I know you're just an ordinary guy who's popped his top. But you must connect with those people out there.
Dangerous conversation.
RadioInfluence.com. About a half hour left in the show. We've been talking a lot. You know, You know what I know? Here's what I know. You will always hear me talking about the media because I've been through all the stages of it. Back, you know, in the 60s and 70s when hundreds of companies or families owned a TV station or a radio station, and they were doing their thing, and, you know, they might lean left or right, but you had diversity. And now we don't have any of that. We don't have it in our banking system. We don't have it in our energy systems. And we fucking definitely don't have it in our media. And that's why I'm a little bit proud of what I'm doing here and what other radio shows are doing. Good for them. And good for me. Do we get a bill? Oh, sure. Just take all fucking day. Give me my bill. You know? Damn. Give me a bell. There we go. Okay, cool. All right. You know, speaking of media, this is a guy, you know, I never saw this, and I'm anti-fracking. And if you don't know what the hell fracking is, Google it. Learn what it is. It is the raping of what is left underneath the shale, you know, thousands of feet under the ground where natural gas pockets and oil pockets still exist. And now they're going to drill vertically, then horizontally, and inject a ton of pressure underwater and a ton of toxic chemicals. Listen to David Letterman. This is before Letterman left. And, you know, Dave's a upstate New York guy, you know, Connecticut guy. He's very, very wealthy. He lived just outside of New York City. But you know what? He did his homework. And, you know, other than Paul kind of chiming in every 8 seconds, this is a great David Letterman anti-fracking rant. This is why I am so – if you don't understand the importance of media, when I play that intro at the beginning of the show, it's an intro I created in 2004 when I started to publicly question 9/11 and the physics and everything else. Well, there's a part in there where the guy says the media is, you know, to paraphrase, the heartbeat of a democracy. You cannot have a democracy without a healthy media. Listen to Letterman here. This is, you know, that's what I like about Dave, man. Dave, don't, you know when you know you're leaving a show and you know, I got a year left of my contract. Fuck them. I'm going to speak out.
Hey, for Bobcats, ladies and gentlemen.
Bobcats, he will.
Let's talk about fracking. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to understand it. Here's what I know about fracking. The greedy oil and gas companies of this country have decided that they can squeeze every last little ounce of oil and gas out of previously pumped wells by injecting the substrata of our planet with highly toxic carcinogenic chemicals.
You know, for a guy who doesn't know anything about it, he knows everything about it.
Which then seep into the aquifer and hence into the water supply of Americans. The Delaware Water Gap has been ruined. The Hudson Valley has been ruined. Most of Pennsylvania has been ruined. Virginia, West Virginia has been ruined. Colorado has been ruined. New Mexico has been ruined. They're poisoning our drinking water. And the EPA said, you know what? You no longer have to comply with EPA standards for stuff you put into the water.
Why?
So the greedy oil and gas company said, great, let's go crazy. And then some states are saying, no, we have a transparency law. So the oil and gas companies say, okay, we'll tell you everything but 2% of what we're putting in.
In other words, we've injected stuff into the under the ground, and we're going to tell you that 96% of it is water. We're not going to tell you what the other couple of percents are because they're acidic, cancer-causing, toxic waste. And it ends up in the aquifer, and it ends up in the water supply. And you wonder why. Aaron Brockovich and anybody else who's ever, John Travolta in a cheesy movie, everybody who's ever defended the small-town person who signed on a dotted line because they get $5,000 an acre, and then suddenly their kid has cancer 5 years later. There is no energy shortage. Solar, wind, geothermal, tidal, algae, hemp. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We have got to stop treating the fucking planet like a... We treat it like a shitter at a rock concert. You know, the one that's way away from the stage that no one even goes near? Flies won't even go near it. There's so much toxic shit in there. That's how we treat our planet? Go, Dave.
To your tap water. And that's supposed to make us feel better.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're screwed.
Oh,
that boy, Dave. Way to go out gracefully, Boa.
Okay.
You see, Letterman's got a decent toupee on. He's got that little thing that's got little spots in it. It looks like, you know what? It's still a toupee. Gary Johnson, if you're going to be the president of the United States of America, talk to David Letterman.
I've seen people set fire to their tap water.
Yes, I
can. Can I get you a nice...
That's in a movie called Gasland. Google it. And Gasland 2. They had so much methane, that's how the English say it, so much methane in their water that their fucking water coming out of their faucet lit on fire. Way to go, Dave.
And some ice water, kaboom.
Oh, boy.
I've seen people set fire to their toilets.
Well, that's a different story.
So that was a different thing. That was...
Yeah.
I was in college.
That's just...
I don't think they still do that.
That's like too much Taco Bell. That's how you get that done. Thank you, David Letterman. Thank you very much. Let's switch to music. Now, this is a quagmire. Because I started growing up collecting 45 RPM records, 33 RPM records. And then along came cassettes and cassette recorders. And I remember the first time I ever, I guess I would say, pirated a song. I was listening to WDRC FM in Hartford. I was 12 years old, and I had a small portable cassette recorder with a microphone. And I had the microphone leaning against the speaker on a little radio. And I could see the little levels, and I had it on record and pause. And every time a song came on, D, Big D, 103, blah, 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 Dick Medallion, here's Manfred Mann, bump, bump, ba-da, and I pull that pause up. Come on without, come on within. And all of a sudden, 3 minutes later, I have pirated a piece of music. Manfred Mann will never get my 48 cents for the 45 RPM record called The Mighty Quinn because I had a recording deck. And then you made tapes. Oh, this is my sex tape. This is my party tape. This is my cruising tape. And how did you do it? With a pause button and a record. So far, way before Metallica went after Napster, way before what you're about to hear from Joe Walsh and Roger Waters, Joe Walsh from the Eagles, and of course his solo career, and of course Roger Waters from Pink Floyd, you're going to hear them essentially say the same thing. But not much has changed except the technology. I'm guilty of stealing music because it came over a radio and I recorded it. In the 70s, I did that. In the 80s, we all did it. And then comes the internet and Napster and Metallica. And here we are in the tail end of this. And Joe Walsh, let me turn the volume up here. We'll listen to Joe first, then we'll go to Roger Waters. They essentially say the same thing. Now, remember, these guys both were recording artists in the 70s and 80s, and they got royalties. They got money because they sold units, records. Not that they weren't ripped off from record companies, who probably kept 95 cents on the dollar. You know, Madonna and Frank Sinatra and other people got up to about 20 cents on the dollar. But for the most part, even these two artists made a lot of money because their products sold. Not anymore. This is Joe Walsh first. We'll play him first. The harsh truth about the music industry today.
Records, record stores, record sales, it's all gone. And it's up to the young musicians to try and figure it out. There's no money in it. There's no record companies. It's free. You can download it. Nobody gets paid. so they can't afford to make music. That's what's happening. And they're just cranking out music that is like just a recipe. You know, nobody's playing at the same time. Everybody's...
What he means there is you don't have a band in a recording studio, the drummer's over there, the guitarist, the bass player, the singer, and they're actually recording the song live. Now, everything is done separately, and I'm going to back it up because he does get on a roll, but that's what he was talking about when he said nobody's playing live.
Everybody's adding on virtual instruments that don't exist onto a drum machine that somebody programmed. And you can tell in the music that's out now. It's all been programmed. There's no mojo. There's nobody testifying. There's not
mojo testifying, otherwise known as soul. Go watch some local band in a local bar and watch that singer close their eyes and sing and feel and act out what they're singing. That's mojo. That's testifying.
Not the magic of a human performance, which is never perfect. And the magic of a human performance is what we all know and love in the old records by the way they were made. And it's all gone. So we'll see what the digital age has in store. And that, I thought, was a good undercurrent to put in my album.
It's kind of funny, like the old guys singing about the new way things are done. You know, I get that part. You know, Joe Walsh is no different than anybody else. Yeah, he seems a little bit more, I don't know, he's kind of level-headed. He's talking about the way it is, and he doesn't sound angry. I'm not saying he's not a little disappointed, because he is. But you understand what I'm saying is, if you listen to him say that over again, you won't hear an anger in his voice. Well, let me scroll up to Roger Waters here, and then you're going to hear something slightly different. Of course. Where is my Roger Waters? I thought I posted it. I'm on my timeline right now on Facebook, in case you're wondering how I store some of my audio. The problem is I post too much stuff, and then the timeline gets too long, and then it takes forever to find it. All right. I guess I'll have to find him searching. He sent me searching. Oh, tell me I didn't save it. Don't tell me I didn't save it. I got a show to do. Fuck. All right, I promise I'll find it before the end of the show, which is 18 minutes away. But I wanted to get to a story I promised you a little bit earlier. Now, man, I go back and forth about GMOs with people. And they go, can't you see this is a way of creating a corn stalk that's, you know, two-thirds the size of the normal one? Or the salmon, the North Atlantic salmon, is now, you know, 6 pounds heavier than the average one. And this is going to bring more product to mouths. It's going to feed people. You know, we've got 7.5 billion people. How do you expect us to feed people? Well, that's a different story. And I think we'll do that on its own, that just the idea that everyone's backyard is collecting sunlight and soil and you know, 100 years ago, a lot of people had gardens. Not so many people have them. So to sit around and absolutely depend on everything you ingest to come from outside of you is naive. And we're seeing more and more home gardening. We're seeing more and more people. There's an article I read the other day about a person that grew tons of food on a third of an acre. And that's healthy food. And there's no GMO in it. And there's no pesticides in it. And there are no poisons in it. It's the kind of stuff that actually when you eat it, it tastes great. And yeah, it's actually good for you. Versus what we call the GMO, the genetically modified organism. And Monsanto is the face of this. And I'm not saying it's all evil. And I'm not saying some of it doesn't have a place. But the moment you refuse, to label what I'm eating, I get suspicious. How do you not get suspicious? If someone goes, oh, yeah, eating that rice? Yeah, what's in it? Never mind. Fuck you. I want to know what's in it. Nah, you know, we don't have to tell you because we went to court and the court said we don't have to tell you. Well, wait a minute. We changed it a little. What do you mean how you changed it? Have you tested it for years in rats and animals? No. Humans are the guinea pigs in GMO. That's how it works. That's what you're going to get. You are the test subject. And we're not even three generations into GMO yet. We're about one and a half generations into GMO. So how do we know it doesn't cause autism or cancer or all these things that are going on? How do we know that genetically modified food isn't two things affecting us differently and not absorbed the same way our body's built? When you change the genetics of one thing, the next thing in that food chain might not be able to absorb it, might absorb it the wrong way, might catalyze it the wrong way, and so on and so forth. Oh, it'll feed the Ethiopians. Well, here's the problem. Nature doesn't give a shit about Monsanto. This planet is 4.5 billion years old. You don't think that organisms don't find a way around an obstacle? Then you're an idiot. You're naive. One of the agricultural biotechnology's greatest success stories is become a cautionary tale and how short-sighted mismanagement can squander the benefits of genetic modification. After years of predicting it would happen, and after years of having their suggestions largely ignored by companies, farmers, and regulators, scientists have now documented the rapid, evolution of corn rootworms that are resistant to BT corn. Until BT corn was genetically altered to be poisonous to the pests, rootworms used to cause billions of dollars in damage to U.S. crops. Because there's a piece of food to eat, and I'm a goddamn worm. You bet your ass I'm going to eat it. BT corn now accounts for 3/4 of the U.S. crop. Did you know that? You might want to just buy some corn from someone who grew it down the street. That's all I'm saying. The vulnerability of this corn could be disastrous for farmers and the environment. Here's a quote. Unless management practices change, it's only going to get worse, said Aaron Grassman, Iowa State University entomologist. That's pretty gross. You know what? Here's a quote from my show. I hate big words and I cannot lie. And co-author of the March 17th proceedings from the National Academy of Sciences, studying this the study that describes rootworm resistance. Essentially, when first planted in 1996, BT corn, yes, my windows are open, quickly became hugely popular among U.S. farmers. Now, within a few years, populations of rootworms and corn borers, those are, they kind of bore into the root of the corn. And if you got a stalk of corn, kind of like a worm in an apple, they can't sell that. They can't use that. Okay. Within the few populations of rootworms and corn borers, another common corn pest had plummeted across the Midwest and other. In other words, nature got its ass kicked because BT corn said, if this worm eats me, it'll die. And that was 1996, right? And there was like, high five, man. No more worms, no more pests. Now we're good to go. But by the turn of the millennium, however, scientists who study the evolution of insecticide-resistant products were warning of imminent problems. Any rootworm that could survive BT exposure would have a wide open field in which to reproduce. In other words, no competition from other insects unless the crop was carefully managed. In other words, from 96, 2006, 2016. 20 years. And you're looking at how many crops? 20 crops, right? Roughly. Let's say you rest that field every 4 years. So we'll remove 4 years. 16, 15 crops. By the time you get around to crop 15 or 16, the insects have now evolved to become completely resistant to the poison and toxins included in the DNA of the corn. And guess what? We haven't. Because our generational change isn't like an insect. An insect can evolve over, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. How many different generations are there versus humans? There's a generation of humans is roughly 25 years. We have yet to go through an entire generation of consumption of GMO foods. But we're told they're safe because their job is to kill the insect. Meanwhile, we eat it. This is the kind of stuff that is the hubris and the ego of mankind that will come back and bite itself in the ass. Now, if you're sitting, oh, wow, you know, the Ethiopian people now have a little bit more rice or a little bit more corn and, 10,000 less people die a year because about 50,000 people a day die of starvation in the world. And I understand that side of it. Sure, why not? Of course. Who doesn't want to end starvation? Who doesn't want to, make the world a better place? But that's not what this is about. This is about controlling the food. This is about controlling the seed. This is about suing farmers who decide to plant a different corn across the street from your GMO corn because their pollen from their corn infected your corn, and now I'll see you in court. This is about money. It's always been about money. Corporations don't have big hearts. They're not out to go, oh, I just want to take that little starving child and Sally Struthers and give him a big hug. Fuck that. They don't care about that. What they care about is the profit. And guess what? They are in such a brand new field, and everybody acts like it's, oh, yeah, GMO, no big deal. Yeah, yeah. You're the guinea pig. I'm the guinea pig for GMO products. I don't like that idea. And you shouldn't either. That's one story. That's one story how nature only took, a couple of decades to go, eat me. Because I can eat you now. Because all the insects after me will survive. Hell yeah. Jeff Goldblum.
You understand politics, you think you understand political parties. You're off on the crap.
On
you don't know
one.
Who the Illuminati is. If you're Republican or you're Democrat, you're wrong. Why?
Why are you doing this to me?
Some of these things I queue up actually have a pause button and a volume control, and some don't. So I apologize for that. I wish I was hoping to get that one up sooner. excuse me. I got time for, no, I got like 5 minutes. I'm going to do like one more story here quick. Yeah, let's go back to cannabis and do something upbeat. Now that you know how bad you're being butt-fucked by Monsanto, you don't even care. All right, Allison Holcomb knows a thing or two about cannabis. These are the nine women that are doing something positive about the concept of cannabis and hemp and what it could mean to people. These are people that educate themselves on the subject or the science or both and get in front of microphones. And all I can say is thank God for these people. Allison Holcomb knows a thing or two about cannabis. After all, she was instrumental in legalizing or bringing a legal weed to Washington. Now, Holcomb has served as the Deputy Drug Policy Criminal Justice Director for Washington State. And she drafted the original legislation that helped push that through. This woman has a name called Ah Warner. Her first name is Ah, A-H. That's crazy.
Is the owner and operator and the founder of Cannabis Basics, a topicals manufacturing company, and they're based out of Washington State. Now, our business is entirely led by a female staff, and they made history last year when Cannabis Basics was awarded one of the first trademark logos ever issued to a company that not only works with cannabis-infused products, but has the world cannabis, cannabis in its name. If you notice on this show, do you ever hear me say pot, weed, marijuana? If you want to be taken seriously in that conversation, call it by its real name. Jane West. She looks like Tina Fey, by the way. Kind of cute. The list would not be complete without the founder of Women Grow, the largest professional network in the cannabis industry. An anomaly in the usually male-dominated sphere. I like that. Women bring it to the cannabis market. I love it. West shows her strength, resilience, and grace under fire when she vaporized cannabis live on CNBC. How about that? And she was fired from her job, but she's like, fuck you, who cares? Ophelia Chong. I know. Every time someone has a first name as Ophelia, you feel like it's going to be like a Rodney joke. Ophelia. She saw the need for change in her prescription of the cannabis industry and took it upon herself to make it happen. She launched StockPotImages.com, the first stock photo agency to specialize in cannabis-related photos, and anyone who pursued the photos. I love that. I love that. Betty Aldworth. See, there's a niche within a niche within a niche. Betty Aldworth served as the advocacy director for the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol in Colorado in 2012. So she's, you know, one of the people that contributed to the turnaround in that state. But she didn't stop there. She joined the National Cannabis Industry Association as deputy director, where she developed crucial education programs. I love it. Sue Sisley is a physicist. Phycratist and formal clinical professor at University of Arizona College. And she's known for her research and potential medical uses for cannabis. So basically, she's a scientist who spoke out loud. Toni Savage Fox, T-O-N-I, by the way. She's a busy woman. She founded 3D Cannabis Center with the desire to ensure safe, reliable access points to quality cannabis. 3D Cannabis Center made history when it became the first retail shop to make a legal sale of recreational cannabis during Colorado's recreational opening. Good for you. Jody Emery, by the way, she's the wife of Mark Emery. Mark sold seeds. He was in prison for a long, long time. Amanda Ryman, or Reiman, manager of marijuana law and the policy for the Drug Policy Alliance. And there you go, 9 gorgeous, amazing women who, you know, got it right. They got it right. They decided to not let their fear get in the way. And maybe they consume. I can't say they do, but I wouldn't doubt it if they do, because that's where the fear goes away. That's where you go, oh, cannabis, yeah, I've consumed it, I've eaten it, or it works for my arthritis, or my grandmother takes it, or my sister used it during her chemo, or by the way, you know, I have a niece, and she's autistic, or I have a nephew who has seizures, and, you know, and so on and so on and so on. The stories are compiled. By the way, please check out reset.me. 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 Amber Lyon. Have I talked about Amber? I think I have. I can't say for sure. But Amber worked for CNN. She suffered PTSD during her reports. She kind of was trying to tell both sides of a terrorist war story. They never ran her story. She found out she's being railroaded. She left modern media, like I did, or other people have,
And then she went on her own journey and discovered everything from ayahuasca to psilocybin to cannabis. So she decided to set up Reset.me, where thousands, tens of thousands of people have actually given their testimony in person, not in person, but said, you know what, I had PTSD and I took mushrooms, or I had depression and I took acid, or I was an alcoholic and my pharmacist gave me so-and-so. Reset.me. Please check it out. That's a fast 2 hours. God, I'm losing my voice. I just realized that. I got to about two-thirds of what I wanted to talk about. But it's very important that if you like what we're doing here, Dangerous Conversation, or if you like what Radio Influence is about, it doesn't matter what the show's at. MMA, wrestling, baseball, Fabulous Sports Bay, Rich Rear. There's so many different people here, and Nancy Alexander coming on. We're, like I said, probably more of a soccer mom with attitude. Please support it. But even more than supporting it, share it. Let everybody in your social media area know about Radio Influence. It's going to do us a huge... Man, I'm losing my voice.
Apologize.
You know what? This is a quiet monster growing under the surface of the water. And my numbers have gone through the roof. I've only been here 3 months. And all I can say is, if you're downloading this show, thank you. Please do. iTunes, Stitcher, and of course right here at RadioInfluence.com. And more importantly, you know, copy and paste a link. Send it to a friend. Help us grow a network of people who have a little bit more to say than terrestrial media or mainstream media will let us get out. And if you can do that, you're not just a fan of the show or a fan of the network, you're a fan of new media. Please help us out. Things are going great. I'll talk to you again next week. You have yourself a great week. This is Dangerous Conversation on RadioInfluence.com. Bye!
What's up, world? I'm Pants.
I'm Monica.
And I'm Kathy.
And we're on the beach.
When we're not blowing it with the opposite sex, we love talking movies, TV shows, sports, and current events, just like you do.
We'll hit those topics, and of course, we'll keep you updated on what's going on in our radio careers, or lack thereof. On the Beach with Pants, Kathy, and Monica, every week on Radio Influence.